9 years ago, Kurt Eichenwald published a book that told the story of an FBI case against an agribusiness giant. It revolved around an eccentric cooperating witness named Mark Whitaker. The book, The Informant, has now been adapted into a film of the same name. It stars Matt Damon and opens this Friday in theaters all over town. And a special edition of the book has just been released by Broadway Books. I'm very pleased that all of those things have brought Kurt Eichenwald back to our show today. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
As I said, the book was originally published 9 years ago. What's it been like to revisit it?
You know, this is sort of the story that never goes away. And in fact, all over these years, I've been in frequent contact with Mark Whitaker, the informant. And at this point, I hear from him about every 2 or 3 weeks. And it's the story that's never left.
Well, he was reluctant to talk to the press when this whole thing happened.
Oh, at the beginning?
Oh. Why did he talk to you?
Well,
No, I know he's a blabbermouth, but I'm talking about really telling the truth.
Oh, yeah. Well, he had a deep difficulty with truth. When he talked to me, I'll give something away. I did a lot of interviews with him in prison, and he was in prison, not me. And these went over many, many, many different meetings, and there'd be one meeting where he'd tell me something that I knew was a lie, but I would never confront him. I would never say, well, that's a lie. And then some meeting down the road, I'd remember to bring it up again, and I'd bring it up again, and he'd tell a completely different story. I mean, the one I remember the most, I said, okay, this happened. He's never happened. I'm like, well, what about, it's never happened. I'm like, okay. And came back to it maybe a month and a half later. And I said, well, tell me about that thing. Oh, okay. And he recounts the story. So it was an interesting experience.
Well, and thinking about this interview, I was concerned that there might be some spoilers for people who want to see the movie. How can we get around that? Because I remember that the reviews for the book in 2000 gave away pretty much all of the major plot twists.
Yeah, I'm basically gonna hold back. I gave a little bit of a taste. I mean, really, what you've got here is a story that, as you read it, you begin to think you know what's happening, and time again, you find out that you don't.
Which is the sort of thing that we're used to in fiction, books like The Good Soldier with the Unreliable Narrator, mm-hmm. where we have to start figuring out what is truth and what is not truth. And the film kind of starts that way, too. We totally believe in Mark Whitaker at the beginning, mm-hmm. and then little by little we realize that this is a person who cannot be trusted.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, many, many years ago, I saw first a play called Death Trap. Which was exactly that storyline. You think you know what's happening, then it ends up you don't. And then a movie, Body Heat, where same storytelling mm-hmm. technique. And I had always wanted to do that kind of storytelling technique, but I'm not particularly good at fiction. And when this story came along, where basically everyone in the story on some level or another is a liar, well, gee, I can just tell the story without revealing whose lies are which, and everybody will get that kind of surprise.
On the other level, on the corporate conspiracy level, how would you compare it to some of the other more recent ones like Enron, which you also wrote about?
You know, it's funny. Every time I think that a scandal has hit as high as it can hit, another one comes along that just outshines it on many, many levels. This story, the informant involving the Archer Daniels Midland Company and their price fixing, it was very important. I mean, a lot of people, all of the listeners here were defrauded. They all, buy packaged goods. They all drink soda. And, ADM's products are in those things. But in that story, I wasn't so much interested in the crimes, as important as they are, and you see them laid out, I was more interested in the investigation itself and the aftermath.
Well, how did the FBI come into contact with Mark Whitaker in the first place?
This one I'll have one little spoiler because it happens very early in the book. It's revealed very early in the book. Whitaker's...
We can have it. By the way, I'm of two minds about spoilers because the book came out. We talked about it at that time. This was a story that was in all the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the film. And in the end, the film is a success because it's a success. I mean, they've created some interesting characters, and we get involved in the people. And I'm not so – I mean, I don't want to spoil it for on every level, but some things can be said.
Okay, they're all
public record, aren't they?
Yeah, I'll do that here.
Otherwise, we're going to wind up just skirting everything.
Well, the way this starts, this fellow Mark Whitaker is the head of ADM's bioproducts division. And basically, his business is supposed to be taking bacteria and feeding it dextrose, and out comes a product called lysine.
And what's the importance of lysine? This is a fairly new market for Archer Daniels.
Yeah, I mean, it's an important feed additive. It's why chickens, when you buy them in the store, are much more plump than they used to be because they're all eating lysine. And the problem was that this required all this bacteria, and the bacteria kept dying in these giant vats, and ADM was making no money off of this. They were losing a lot of money. And so Whitaker's job was on the line. And so one day he comes in and talks to the vice chairman, Mick Andreas, and says, I now know why everything has been happening, why it's so terrible, because I got a call from a guy at an executive at Ajinomoto, one of our competitors, and he says, Ajinomoto has a saboteur at our company, and he's going to reveal the identity if we pay him $10 million. Well, there's a little back and forth, but in the end, the ADM executives contact the FBI, much to Mark Whitaker's dismay.
Was he hoping to pocket the $10 million?
You went right there. Nobody ever goes there. You know, the obvious question is, where was the money going to go? You know, he provided them with a bank account number. And I've never doubted that that money was intended for him. A lot of people go back and forth, was it or was it not? But, you know, you sort of go, well, where was the money going?
Well, he invented this conspiracy.
Yes, then that's what it comes down to, is the FBI comes in to investigate the saboteur and extortionist story. And Whitaker says, wait, you know, don't look there. Look over here at this price-fixing conspiracy. And it ultimately ends up that everything he said about the saboteur and the extortionist was made up. And
The price fixing was true.
But all the price fixing was true.
So he was taking all the heat off of himself and putting the heat elsewhere.
Yes. I mean, he sits there going, you know, I have something to tell you that's very large and much bigger than this saboteur story. So let's just forget that. So he had a lot of odd reasons for becoming a cooperating witness.
My guest is Kurt Eichenwald, the New York Times bestselling author of three nonfiction books, a former senior writer for The Times. He is a two-time winner of the George Polk Award for Excellence in Journalism, as well as a two-time finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, a winner of the Payne Award for Ethics in Journalism. His book, The Informant, was published originally in 2000, and it's just been re-released, obviously, because of the new movie starring Matt Damon, directed by Steven Soderbergh, is soon to be released as well. The book is published by Broadway Books. And this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So he reveals this true story, and the FBI gets all excited.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about Archer Daniels Midland, which is a very well-connected, politically powerfully connected company. Would the FBI be in any way a bit hesitant to try to go after them?
Well, what's interesting is this, you know, we talk about it as the FBI, and one of the things you learn from this book is it's not some grand institution of the FBI. It's, you know, a couple of guys in Midwestern Illinois, and they go to their boss in Midwestern Illinois, and he says, yeah, okay, go do it. And
because they see this as a real career opportunity.
They see it as a major case, and certainly that's a career opportunity. I'm not sure if they looked at it, you know, straight up that way. But the folks in Washington, you know, sure, the information was going up the line, but nobody was paying attention to it. And it wasn't until much later that they came to realize that this incredibly politically powerful company was under criminal investigation. And so that was, you know, when things got a little dicey.
Dwayne Andreas, the president or the owner or whatever, he's one of the biggest political contributors to both parties. But the FBI had some run-ins with ADM before, hadn't it?
They have had a lot of back and forth. I mean, sometimes they worked with ADM. Back in the late 1980s, there was a sting operation in the Chicago Mercantile Exchange where there were a bunch of FBI agents pretending to be traders, and they were working as ADM traders. And ADM thought it was being ripped off in the Mercantile Exchange, so they got the FBI to go down there and conduct a criminal investigation, and lots of people got arrested. But then the flip side was ADM had been investigated for price fixing. ADM had been investigated for environmental violations. You know, these were not babes in the woods.
And how did the price fixing involving lysine work?
It was pretty easy, actually. I mean, the whole purpose of price fixing is just to say, hey, let's stop competing with each other, various companies, and let's just all agree on what we're going to do.
Were they just doing this with lysine, or should we assume that they were doing this with any number of divisions?
Well, it's interesting. As it played out, I mean, Whitaker, for whatever his problems were, Whitaker ended up being the sole linchpin behind the largest series of price-fixing cases ever. Lysine is where it started. Then ADM, under the FBI settlement, was required to give up the next one, citric acid, which is the stuff that you find in the sodas. They also had tapes, which I have these tapes, where it became clear that they were doing it with something called lactic acid. Then it went into the vitamins business. Then it went into – and it's just been spreading out. They've gotten billions of dollars of settlements.
Did anyone ever figure out what was going on with the lysine and why the bacteria were killing it?
I can speculate.
Uh-huh. Because that isn't dealt with in the film.
No, and because there's
it's sort
there's
of like no, that whole plot just kind of drops.
There's no known answer.
Oh,
but,
still.
Yeah, because it really comes down to what, you know, how do you get into that circumstance? My belief, again, it goes back to the $10 million. Where was that going to go? Well, once the FBI showed up, the plant started working. Mm-hmm. There was somebody who had the power to make the plant stop working. And also to come along and say, well, to make it start working, we should send $10 million over.
Oh, you're suggesting Mark Whitaker. Wow, he seems even more complicated than I thought.
It's a theory.
Because he does come across also as a bit of a boob. There's something very naive about this guy.
He is the most interesting person I've ever encountered. And I tried to get the screenwriter, try to explain it to him, but the best way to do it was to introduce him to the real people. And so before he wrote the screenplay, we were going around the country and meeting people who were, you know, the real characters. And he'd ask him, well, you know, what did Whitaker do to you? Oh, he lied about this and he implicated me in this crime. And, you know, he really harmed me with my family and stabbed me in the back of this. And then the screenwriter, Scott Burns, would say, well, what do you think of him? Oh, he's a great guy. I really like him. And he couldn't get his head around it. Scott, he walked out saying, all of these people have these horrible stories about Mark Whitaker, and they all end up saying they like him. And that, you know, that's what you get from Matt Damon's portrayal, is he's this nice, naive boob who's treacherous.
Has Mark Whitaker seen the film?
Yes, he has.
And what does he think about the way he's portrayed?
He loves the movie, and he and his wife saw it in June, and they walked away. I mean, lights came up, and he said, wow, that's exactly what happened.
Even though he comes across as
I mean, he knows what he did.
He's the hero and then the villain.
Yeah, but he knows what he – I mean, one of the things he said before he saw the movie was – to me was, look, they can't show me doing anything that's worse than what I did. And so he's very realistic about it. He knows what he did. He knows how he did it. His wife loved the movie because their concern wasn't that he would look bad. Their concern was that he would look bad in a way that wasn't true. And if you're just having presented, here's who you are and here's what you did, well, you know, you sort of have to shrug your shoulders and say, that's it.
Well, I'm getting the feeling that we still don't know the complete story anyway, and the only person who really knows it is Mark Whitaker.
I don't even think he knows it. I mean, there was a time when he was objecting to something that was in the movie, saying that didn't happen. And I said, Mark, yeah, it did. And he's like, no, it didn't. And I went and I got, you know, a tape interview and the documents, and the interview was with him. And I finished it, and, you know, he had a mental illness. He's now under treatment. And I finished it, and he said, I just don't remember everything. I have so much trouble keeping straight what happened and what didn't. So I don't know what he remembers and knows.
Kurt Eichenwald's book, The Informant, subtitled The True Story Based on a Tattletale, is now available in a new edition from Broadway Books. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. Kurt Eichenwald is here. He is the author of The Informant, the book that the new film starring Matt Damon is based on. A new paperback edition has just been released by Broadway Books. Throughout the book, several FBI agents remarked that Whitaker was one of the best cooperating witnesses that they had ever come across.
Boy, were they wrong.
But what made them think he was so good?
Well, he really was good at doing the job.
He got people to say things on tape. It's almost like he had been a trained professional.
Yeah, he was able to get people to repeat things that they had said when they weren't on tape. He would, and people would say something. My favorite little one was, a Japanese guy saying, well, we really can't meet in the United States. And Whitaker says, yeah, but what's that mean? And you're like, well, the United States is very strict for, you know, antitrust enforcement. Well, there you go. I mean, it's like a confession right there. And there was a part where, and this is in the movie, where everybody's sitting down in this meeting room where there's a video camera taping everything. And one of the guys sits directly in front of the camera. I mean, it's just all you see is his back. And Whitaker walks over and says, oh, here, you'll be much more comfortable over here, and moves the chair and the camera becomes free. And that's when they look at this and go, boy, this guy is good.
Well, it comes across, at least to someone like me, that everything was a game for him.
Yes. He loved it. I mean, it took him until he really
started.
Including
the cheating.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy. He's a happy-go-lucky guy, and life he finds very fun. That's why, in the end, when everything started falling apart for him, it was particularly hard, because suddenly his cheery view on the world didn't work anymore.
Well, he had a very high estimation of himself.
Yeah.
I'm not spoiling anything because this is in the commercials, the trailers for the film, but at one point, and he really did say this is not just something that some screenwriter came up with. He told somebody he was Agent 00014 because he was twice as smart as James Bond.
Yeah, twice as smart as 007. I actually talked to him about that later when he was, you know, much better condition. And I said, you know, if you're twice as smart as 007, you wouldn't be 00014. You'd be 003.5. But, yeah, it's a real line.
This is not like the Watergate film, where the screenwriter came up with all sorts of clever things like Follow the Money, which we think was in the original Woodward and Bernstein investigation, but is not.
Right.
This film is pretty much what happened.
Yeah, what's so amazing to me is, you know, the reviews have started coming in based on the film festivals, and almost every review says, well, this is kind of the truth, and it's not like the book. And you know, what I've learned from this is that movie reviewers don't read books.
But they make that assumption.
Yeah, they make that assumption. And they assume that what they're seeing couldn't possibly be true. In fact, after one of the screenings early on, there's an actor, Tom Papa, who is playing Mick Andreas in this movie. And we walk outside after the screening, and he says, you know, I wanted to ask, how much of this movie is really true? I said, all of it. And he goes, no, really, how much of it is true? And I said, all of it. And his mouth drops and says, are you kidding? Like, no. He goes, oh, my God. So
what happened when they realized that they had an unreliable witness here? Didn't at one point weren't the agents consulting behavioral specialists for pointers on how to?
That was before they began to
realize
how bad.
This is when he decided not to cooperate for a
little
while.
Yeah, that was early on. That was early on, and they when everything fell apart. I mean, you know, on some levels, it's like they were walking along on solid ground, and suddenly the ground fell out from under everybody. Everybody's clawing, trying to find a way to stop.
Well, while the FBI was investigating ADM, the Department of Justice's antitrust case against General Electric was being dropped. That case was about price fixing in the industrial diamond market. Did that add to the pressure for the agents and the prosecutors on this ADM case?
Well, for the agents, it was a very bad sign because they were not particular fans of the antitrust division. And what you had, that case wasn't dropped. It went trial. And the judge said, you don't have a case, and threw it out.
Really wanted to get a good case here.
They wanted to get a good case, but they were afraid that the prosecutors were going to blow it. And so, you know, that there was a lot of tension that went on back and forth.
They didn't realize that it wasn't the prosecutors who were going to blow it.
Yeah.
It was that chief witness.
But in the end, they got the conviction. So they were able to stitch the case back together.
Did Mark Whitaker think that he could fool the FBI?
Mark Whitaker was in a condition that he believed he was smarter than everybody.
Had he seen The Firm?
Outwits
the FBI?
And he thought that, I mean, if you go through The Firm, when he saw the movie, and this is a scene in the film and it's in the movie, in the book, when he sees the movie, he totally associates himself with, you know, Mitch McDear, the Tom Cruise character, because that's just like him. He's the cooperating witness with the FBI. And, hey, Mitch McDear tapes the FBI agents. Well, guess what Mark Whitaker then started doing? And, in fact, there was a private detective, Jules Krull, who's probably pretty well known. And at one point he sat down and had this theory that Whitaker was acting out The Firm. And so he went through the entire book and marked everything that was similar to The Firm. And you were finding things like even the background of Mitch McDear was the background Whitaker claimed to have. And by the end, it was, I think, 2 pages, single space typed, issue after issue after issue.
I'm not going to talk more about that background. That would be a terrible spoiler, because that is one of the big surprises.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, he tries to start a price war in the lysine market.
Yeah.
This guy has delusions of grandeur.
Well,
how successful is he? Well, he is the president of a division.
Yeah, he could have done it. He could have done it. I mean, the thing is, he was trying to drive the FBI away because he wanted them, you know, he'd revealed the price fixing. Now, go away. I don't want to do this anymore. And they kept pressing him. Well, if he starts a price war, which is the opposite of price fixing, where he starts driving the price down, well, then there's no more price fixing. And so that's what he tried to do.
And at one point, he actually convinced himself that once the case was brought to court and he was the hero, that ADM would ask him to become its president.
Yeah, that's also in the commercials and the words that are spoken. In that scene are the words that were spoken. And he had a very unrealistic view of where he was headed.
Whitaker collected hours and hours of tape for the FBI. How much of it was made available to you?
Made available. I obtained a lot of it. I obtained the tapes. I obtained the transcripts of almost every tape, and I obtained the what are called the FBI 302s. This is the FBI notes of interview for the entire case and then the subsequent case that follows, and almost none of it is public.
And you also conducted 800 interviews, you say.
Yes.
So this book took you 5 years to write. Were you doing other stuff at the time?
Yeah, I mean, it was the interviews were conducted over, I want to say, 3.5-4 years. And then I'm a very fast writer once I have all the information, and it took about 8 months to write.
Well, there's a whole matter of fact checking. In this case, you have contradictory facts.
Right. which is why, you know, when you go through, I love the notes and sources section because it says, here's how I did what I just did. And the whole story is built on a foundation of documents. You have to be careful because there were quite a number of forged documents in this story. But, you know, things like videotapes, undeniable. Audio tapes, undeniable. Transcripts, okay, maybe deniable, but still pretty reliable. Contemporaneous documents, FBI 302s, only to the extent that it shows what was said at the interview. And then on and on up the line until you get at the very top and it's interviews. And if somebody does an interview that contradicts all of the things below that, well,
you have to go back and check everything. Or...
no, they lose. If it, a person's recollection cannot contradict the contemporaneous record. And, you know, when that happens, I oftentimes just have to go, well, can you explain? We have a discrepancy here. And, oh, I remember. Yeah, it was that way.
Kurt Eichenwald's book, The Informant, has just been reissued by Broadway Books. It's also the basis of the new film starring Matt Damon, directed by Steven Soderbergh. Agribusiness seems to be just as popular as ever. What's happened to ADM and the Andreas family in the years since the case?
Well, the Andreas family has kind of moved away. I mean, Dwayne Andreas is, I don't remember his age, but he is showing his age. He's a very elderly man. Mick Andreas, his son,
who plays a major role in this story?
Who's, yeah. And he is out of the company. Alan Andreas, who is his nephew, is out of the company. So you have a whole new leadership at ADM. One of the things I found very amusing, I'm a producer on the film, and I tried to get ADM's cooperation to let us do filming at the company. And I said, you know, it would be, you can either like run and hide or you can embrace the film. And if you do embrace the film, you can say, we cooperated, we have nothing to hide. Well, we went along. And they said, well, let us see the script. And so sent them the script. And this is like after 2 years of talking to them about it, maybe longer, maybe 5 years. And about 3 weeks before filming starts, they say, oh, you can't film here. Like, why? Terrorism. And I actually yelled at them. I was like, what are you talking about? You mean you didn't know there was terrorism starting in 2001? And, you know, now they're going around saying, oh, we cooperated. And I just want to go, no, you didn't. You sandbagged us and you did this just to get the script.
Well, they knew that they were going to be named. You weren't going to fictionalize the name of the company. That's a very important part of this. I guess when I saw the film, not reading the book, but when I saw the film and it was ADM, not some made-up company, I was kind of stunned.
Well, they did it.
I mean, it's a matter of public record.
It's a matter of public. These guys committed crimes. And, you know, the when we were at the set one time and there was a scene where you had three executives and the producer came to me and said, wait, were all three of these people here? I said, no, it's just two of them. And he starts, you know, getting very upset. And I say, wait a minute. All three of them are convicted of this crime. You just have the three of them there for, you know, dramatic purposes. It doesn't matter. That guy was at these meetings. That guy was at these meetings. It's not like you're saying they robbed a bank. I mean, this is the crime they committed. And so the movie plays and it has all three guys in the meeting.
You just were conflating some things that happened.
Well, it was, I mean, it was actually a blend of two different meetings, but not by much. I mean, it was almost all one particular meeting.
I asked you before about how this compares to other scandals. I guess that the thing that makes this different is the fact that we have these incredible characters.
Yes. I mean, truthfully, if...
I mean, Enron is pretty interesting, too. There are a lot of interesting characters there.
Enron, to me, is like the granddaddy of all fraud. I mean, I wrote about corporate fraud for decades. I've never come across a case where the fraud is so amazing.
Why haven't we seen a film about that?
It was bought. It was bought by Leonardo DiCaprio's production company. You know, I'm not sure if the world is ready to see an Enron movie anymore. but that's not my call to make. So if they make it, I'll be very happy.
Well, when the book was published in 2000, the title didn't have an exclamation point. Now it does. Any idea why they wanted to change
it? I absolutely know why. When you had the name The Informant all by itself, the screening audiences, their basic impression prior to seeing the movie was that it was going to be The Insider, you know, a serious drama about a corporate whistleblower, you know, again, and there wasn't that much excitement about seeing it. Afterwards, everybody understood it was not what it was not that. And so there was talk about changing the title, and I think it was Soderbergh who came up with the idea of just add an exclamation point, because that's going to automatically tell everybody this is not what you think.
Well, we start off thinking it is what you think, and then somewhere along the line we realize, wait, there's a certain comedic aspect to this story.
Yeah.
And is that what happened with you when you were writing it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, one of the things...
about a heavy corporate corruption thing.
And it's hilarious. I mean, it really is. It was very funny. There were two instances where people wanted to do a movie. The first guy who came in was Larry Gelbart, the writer of MASH. Well, he wanted to do a comedy.
That would have been a good match.
Yeah, and then the next one, Soderbergh wanted it, and he said when he was reading the book, he couldn't stop laughing. And so, you know, the book is a thriller, but it's a comedic thriller.
And the book is called The Informant. Now it has an exclamation point in this new edition that has just been published by Broadway Books. It's a paperback. Nothing changed?
No.
Except the exclamation point.
Except the exclamation point. And everybody can look past that if they want.
And my great thanks to Kurt Eichenwald, who wrote the book that is now a movie starring Matt Damon. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you for having me.
On tomorrow's show, we'll talk about the role the mom-and-pop store can play in rebuilding the nation's economy, and then writer-director Nicholas Meyer on writing the script for the most revered Star Trek film of all, The Wrath of Khan. Also, pianist Vladimir Feltzman and Tom Crawford, music director of the American Classical Orchestra, on the difference between playing period and modern instruments, plus word maven Patricia T. O'Connor takes your calls on grammar and the English language. The Leonard LoPage Show is produced by Blakely Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Stephanie Bernard. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard LoPage, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.